Okay, we continue now with Masechet Beitza, Daf Lamed Vav Amud Aleph. We're going to begin with the last Tashma. I know that last night we got about 8 lines to the bottom of the Omer. We're going to go back a little bit to Tashma Parsin Machzelas Agabi Kiveres Devorim. We're going to just, rather than start right in the middle of discussion, just take it back a little bit. So the Gemara over here is trying to bring a proof. Of course, we were discussing a machlokas between Ul and Reb Yitzchak as to whether or not it is permissible for a person to go ahead and take a material, a cloth, a mat, and use it to cover something which is muksa. So Toshma says the Gemara, quote, let's take a look at the following braisa, and this particular braisa will seem to shed light on this issue. Parson machzelas agabi kaveres devarim b'shabbos, that permissible to go ahead and take a mat and spread it over a beehive on Shabbos. Bechama mipnei achama, b'gshamim mipnei agshamim. When it's sunny outside, one can do so in order to protect the beehive from the heat. B'gshamim, when it's raining, in order to protect the beehive from the rain. B'vajli is kavin lotzud. However, the one condition is that the one who's doing this cannot have any kavana to trap the bees. Because, of course, trapping the bees would be an iser da'oraisa. Says the Gemara, So what is this proof? This shows that even though the kaveris itself is muksa, according to the braisa, it's permissible to go ahead and cover it. So this would seem to support the position of Ula and be a kashan Rabbi Yitzchak. So it says Gemara, no, why hasanami the ikad devash? This braisa is also talking about a case where there is honey in this beehive, and so therefore, even though the hive itself may be mutter, but since it's mutter to go ahead and to remove the honey is something which is roy Shabbos, it's roy lachila. Therefore, you can go ahead and cover it in order that the honey should not get ruined. So, only Rav Ukva Mimeshan Ravashi, Atinach Bimosacham Adiga Devash. So, Rav Ukva Mimeshan says to Ravashi, this makes sense during the summertime where there's going to be a supply of honey. And it makes sense, therefore, they can go ahead and cover the beehive in order to protect the honey from getting ruined in the sun. However, what are you going to tell me in the wintertime? In the wintertime, there is no honey that's available for consumption. And so therefore, what then would be the purpose in covering it? After all, you're not going to be protecting any honey because there is no honey. So it says the Gemara, lo nitzrucha ella la'osan shtei chalos. No, the braisa is needed to teach you that you can go ahead and you can cover it in order to save, in order to protect the honey that is on those two chalos. Those two chalos referring to two honeycombs that are placed, that remain in the beehive throughout the entire season. And the beekeepers do this so that the bees can survive throughout the winter. They want the hive to survive to the next season. And so therefore, they bedafke keep two chalos, two honeycombs there. And in order that this should not get ruined, so it's permissible to cover it. So says the Gemara, wait a second, what does that do? O son, shtei chalos muksosein. Those two honeycombs themselves are muksa. After all, they are really there for the purpose of the bees, not for human consumption. And so therefore, we're back to square one. Why then is it mutter to go ahead and cover it? So says the Gemara, Rechamai Iskinim, what are we talking about over here? Shechishev alayem. We're talking about a case where, no, prior to Shabbos, the beekeeper said to himself, at any point, I plan to come in here and to take some of this honey and use it for myself. And if that's the case, so then he's permitted to go ahead and cover it. Aval, lo chishev alayem mai, oser. However, what? If he does not make such a calculation in his mind, if he does not set aside this honey for the purpose of his own consumption, so it should be oser. So says the Gemara, well, if that's so, aditani, if we're going to learn the braisa this way, the way we have, and namely the braisa tells us at the end, the one condition that was made in the braisa, it's permissible to go ahead and cover the beehive with machzelas, however, you have to have kavana as to not to trap the bees. So once already we're making this distinction, liflog velis nebidida, the braisa should make a further distinction. When is it true that it's permissible to go ahead and to move a machzeles, to go ahead and take the mat and cover the beehive in order to protect the chalos inside? This is shachishav aleihem. This is only when what? The person says to himself, I may eat them. Avalochi shavaleihem aser. However, if he does not make such a stipulation in his mind, he does not plan on eating them, so it should be aser. So it would seem the Gemara is saying that the Braisa, if the Braisa really meant to make such a distinction, so this could have been stated explicitly, just like another distinction was stated in the Braisa, namely, the Bevachelah is Kavin Latzud. See, sometimes the Mishnah of the Braisa doesn't give us all of the exceptions, all of the parameters, the qualifications of that which it is which is being discussed. But over here, already makes this chiluk, Bevachelah is Kavin Latzud, so it should further make this distinction. Says the Gemara, Chikamer, this is exactly what the Braisa says, Afa Pisha Chishvalein, even though what? He said to himself, I may go ahead and eat from the honey. It's only permissible if he does not have kavanah to go ahead and to trap the bees. So says the Gemara, continues, according to which shita are we following now when we say that the Braisa is talking about a kid's situation where you have the two chalos there, and the reason why the guy is covering it is only because he wants to protect the honey, shechishav aleihem, that he instead in his mind prior to Shabbos that I may take of. This is obviously all according to the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Why? Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, is it not his understanding of muksa that would say that the kaveris is muksa in the first place? Right? So the whole basis for coming to the point we have right now is because we've assumed that this kaveris is muksa. That is according to the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. But says the Gemara, but the problem with that is they must seifa. The Sefer says what? Ubevachelah is kavin latzud. The Sefer, as we've seen, makes a stipulation on the one condition that he does not have kavanah to trap the bees. So says the Gemara, this is the son of Rabbi Shimon. This particular shita seems to follow the position of Rabbi Shimon, the Amar Davashinim is kavin mutter. Rabbi Shimon is the one who says that it's permissible to go ahead and to do something on Shabbos, even though it is possible that what you are doing is going to lead to a certain result, and that result will have an effect which would normally be usher because of particular mlacha. However, Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion that if what you're doing is not your, if your intention is not that this particular result should occur, so that's called a davashin miskavin. Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion that it's mutter. Rabbi Huda, on the other hand, says a davashin miskavin is usher. So the Gemara says the way we're establishing this Braisa now, it seems to be following the position of Rabbi Huda, Lagabi Muksa, but the problem is when you follow the Braisa to its conclusion, so it turns out that the conclusion of the Braisa seems to be following the sheet of Rabbi Shimon. So it can't be both ways. Either this Braisa is reflecting the sheet of one Tana or the other. So it says the Gemara, wait a second, Tizbara, Rabbi Shimon, what do you want to say? You want to say that the conclusion of the Braisa over here seems to follow the position of Rabbi Shimon, who says the Davashin was Kavit's mutter, even according to Rabbi Shimon, Vahabai Virabba Damit Shavayu, Modi Rabbi Shimon Bisik Resha of Alo Yamos. Abai and Rabbi teach that even Rabbi Shimon is Moda, that when we're dealing with what's called a Psik Resha of Alo Yamos, that it's going to be Usr. That means that when is it that Rabbi Shimon says the Davashin was Kavit's mutter on Shabbos? That's only where the result is not certain, where that which you are doing may have a certain result, and that result is something which would normally be usher on Shabbos, but since it wasn't your kavana and it's not certain, so then he says that it's mutter. The classic case of Davashin Miskavin is dragging a bench outside on the lawn, right? So a person goes ahead and he drags a bench from one place to the other. He's dragging it because he wants to schlep the bench. He wants to put it in the shade. He wants to get out of the sun, whatever the case is. And it's possible, as he's dragging the bench, that it's going to make a charitz, it's going to pull up some of the ground, and that would potentially, depending on what's going on and where he is, that may be of some benefit. That would be normally considered an act of charisha, of plowing the earth on Shabbos. So Rabbi Shimon's of the opinion that if you're doing that and your intention is not to plow, and it's not a psik resha, meaning the result is not certain, so then he says it's permissible. However, in a case where it's certainly going to have that effect, even though it wasn't your kavanah, even Rabbi Shimon says it is mutter. So says the Gemara, over here, the effect is certain. If you're going to cover the beehive over here, what does it make a difference what your kavanah was? Bevachelah is kavin. Even according to Rabbi Shimon, this should be a problem. So says the Gemara, liolam kula rihudi. So how are we going to resolve this? We're going to say this as follows. Really, the entire Braisa reflects the position of Rabbi Yehuda. And again, that makes sense, at least the first part, because we've seen already that according to Rabbi Yehuda, who has a more strict interpretation of the laws of Muksa, so it makes sense that we have this whole problem in the first place, that we're trying to talk about how you can go ahead and cover this beehive, which is Muksa. Aye, what about the fact that according to Rabbi Yehuda, a davar shenu miskaven is aser? We're talking about a case where there are kaveh. Says Rashi, these are little chalonos, little windows, little openings on the side of the beehive. And so if you do not go ahead and cover these little windows, it's still possible for the bees to escape. But we had assumed originally that if you cover the beehive, then the bees will certainly be trapped. And so therefore we said, even according to Reb Shimon, this should be called a psikresha. But now we're saying, no, the case over here is that there are these openings on the side, and the low tema, don't say that according to Rabbi Yehuda, actually is kavin latsud. We have to now amend the words of the Braisa. Don't follow the girsa the way it appears over here, ubevachlo is kavin latsud, with the intention that he doesn't intend to trap them. Rather, says the one at the top of the next Amud, ele'em ubevachlo yasena mitsuda, on the condition that he doesn't go ahead and make a mitsuda, meaning he does not go ahead and completely cover the hive on top and on the sides as well. Because if he goes ahead and he does that, so then he will certainly be trapping the bees, and then it's definitely going to be a malacha, regardless of what his intention was, it makes no difference at all. So now, the way the Gemara reads right now, the Braisa follows from beginning to end the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that that there is a problem of Muksa. However, he says, since, again, just following the original, the whole, the Ukimta, the way we have it right now, since there are two chalos that remain in there throughout the season, and Shachishav Aleim, and he had the intent beforehand that he may take of some of this honey, it's permissible to go ahead and cover it. As long as he doesn't go ahead and completely close it up, so that the bees absolutely cannot escape. Says the Gemara Peshitta, if that's the pshat, so then it's obvious that this is usher. In other words, why did the Braisa have to tell me that you're not permitted to go ahead and to trap these bees on Shabbos? Why would anybody in the right mind think that it's permissible to trap bees on Shabbos? We know that trapping is one of the lamates of us malachos. This is something that's certainly prohibited. And so therefore, why would the Braisa even have to state something which is so obvious? Beforehand, when it said Abavachlo Yiskavein, and we considered the possibility that there was a Shitas Rabbi Shimon, okay, but now that we're saying that Bavachli Asena Mitsuda, as long as you don't actually go ahead and completely trap the bees, of course that's Aser. Says the Gemara, not necessarily. Maldutim, perhaps you would have said, Bimino Nitzod Aser, Shalo Bimino Nitzod Mutter. Then maybe you would say that when is it Aser Minatora to go ahead and to trap on Shabbos? That's talking about animals that are Bimino Nitzod, that type of animal typically is trapped. So something like a deer, for example. A deer is a type of animal that people will try to trap, certain types of birds. So when it comes to that, so then it's also Lutzud. Then you're not permitted to go ahead and trap those animals on Shabbos. Shalom Bimino, however, is something which is not typically trapped, such as bees. So then you would think that maybe it's Mutter to go ahead and to cover the beehive in this fashion. Kamash Malan comes along the Bryce and says no. Even though we're talking about something she'in b'mino nitzo, that normally this min is not trapped, it's still going to be us to go ahead and to create a mitsuda, a perfect trap around this beehive. Now the Gemara gives a second answer to a question we asked on Amud Aleph. Right? Originally the Gemara wanted to know that the Braisa says that it's permissible to go ahead and cover the beehive. What do we say? Right, that's what it said. And we had asked the question, makes sense, why there would be honey in the Mosacham in the springtime, in the summertime. However, Mosacham in the winter, there's not going to be dvash. There's not going to be any honey. So it's not going to be honey anyway, so what's the whole issue over here? And that's what led us to that answer. No, we're talking about the honeycombs. So Rav Ashi gives a different answer to that question. Rav Ashi says, Mikatani, it doesn't say over here in the Braisa, Bimos Hachama or Bimos Hagasham. It doesn't say anything about winter or summer. It doesn't say that. What did it say? It says, Bachama Bibnei Hachama. It says, when it's sunny, you can cover it to protect the beehive from the sun, from the heat. Ubagashami, when it's raining, Bibnei Hachama, you can cover it to protect it from the rain. That's what it says. We're talking about a case where what? This is happening in the month of Tishrei, where there is, or I'm sorry, Nisan, the month of Nisan or Tishrei, the ikachama, where there is still sun, the ikashamim, and occasionally there can be rain, v'ikadvash, and there's honey as well. So that would be the situation. So the Braisa never said that this is something that a person can do, or for that matter, would want to do, would need to do all throughout the year. When it says it's just talking about the circumstances under which a person would want to go ahead and actually cover the beehive, but not to suggest that we are talking specifically about a certain season. Okay? Let's go a little further here in the Gemara. Tana, the Gemara quotes a Braisa, which talks about a point that we mentioned in the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, "V'nosn kli tachas hadelof b'shabbos." You can go ahead and you can take a kli, a utensil, and place it under a drip of water on Shabbos. Right? This is another example of placing something, in this case, not on top of, but under something that perhaps we would have thought would have been muksa. Previously, the Gemara clarified, at least according to the Shita of Rabbi Yitzchak, that we're talking about a case where the delef, where the dripping water is something that is roi for Shabbos. It's something that I would perhaps do something with. So Tana says the Gemara, im nesmali akli shofech v'shone v'eino nimna. So there's a braisa which clarifies, or elaborates rather, and says that let's say the kli becomes filled with water. So it's a pretty serious leak. So what you could do is you could be shofech, you could pour out the water, v'shone, and you can go ahead and return it back to its place v'eino nimna. You don't have to in any way hold yourself back from doing this again and again, even if it's going to require constant effort on the part of the individual to go ahead and to empty the kli in order to prevent this particular kli from overflowing. That's permissible. Now the Gemara tells a story which illustrates this idea. Beirei chaya de Abaye dolof. Abaye had a beirei chaya. That's there was a rechayim there, a millstone. So this was a special building, a shack he had, where there was he had a rechayim, he had a millstone which was used to crush the grains. And what happened was, it was dolof, right? It was raining outside, and the leak was coming inside. And it was starting to, according to Rashi, it was starting to ruin the Rechayim, because the Rechayim was made of clay, and it was starting to fall apart. It was getting all clumpy, and it was making a big mess, and he was worried it was going to get ruined. So also the Kami de Rabba, so Abaye didn't know what to do, right? Because this was a pretty bad situation. He didn't know what was permissible for him to do. So he went to ask Rabba. So Amaleh, but Rabba said to Abaye, Zil, Aile Lefur Yech Lahasam, go ahead and take your bed there. In other words, take this Beis Rechaim and turn it temporarily into your bedroom. Now, this leaking roof, which is now falling on top of the Rechaim and ruining it and making it smell and be all sort of disgusting, so that's not now that's called the Graf Shirei. And now it's permissible to go ahead and remove it from your bedroom. Right? You don't have to subject yourself on Shabbos or Yom Tov to have something that is disgusting in front of you. Be it your Shabbos table and your bedroom, that's called Graf Shirei. Something which would otherwise be muksa is not considered to be muksa, or it is permissible to move it in a situation where it's really disgusting and it's going to really, it can ruin your own Shabbos. So over here, if you're going to go ahead and take your bed and bring it to the Beir Chaya, and you have to sleep right next to this this Rechayim that is slowly starting to fall apart, so that's called Graf Shirei. You cannot move it. So Amar Abaye v'Kakashile. I'm sorry, Yosef Abaye v'Kakashile. So Abaye was sitting there, and he wondered, v'Chiyosin Graf Shirei l'Chachila. Does that make any sense? You can go ahead and you can actually create the situation of Graf Shirei l'Chachila. Graf Shirei normally means where something happened, and now there's something really disgusting here. So one of the classic hits of Graf Shirei is like when you're eating, when you're eating at the Shabbos table, and then when you're done with your piece of chicken, you have chicken bones there, or you're having nuts, and then you have the nutshells. So in this case, to leave the chicken bones and the nutshells around all Shabbos, that's disgusting. That's not nice. That's called Graf Shirei. So it's permissible to go ahead to pick it up and throw it in the garbage. But over there, you didn't go ahead and l'chadchila go out of your way to create the case of Graf Shirei. It's just you were eating, and memela, that's what you were left with. But over here, this is not really a case of Graf Shavuei, because after all, who sleeps in the Bay Rechaim? Nobody sleeps there. So you bring your bed there, and they say, oh, now it's a Graf Shavuei case, it's permissible to move it. So Abaye wonders, how could Rabbi say such a thing? Adahachi, as he's thinking to himself, this doesn't make any sense, Nafal Bay Rechaya Dabaye. So what happened was the whole thing collapsed. The whole house, the whole room in which this was, the Rechaim was stored, collapsed. And Omer, he said, Tasily the Avri Adamar. So he said, Oy vey, he said, this is coming to me. He saw this as being a punishment. According to some, it wasn't a punishment. He actually made a tefillah. He said a tefillah that this should be like a kapara for me because of the fact that I second-guessed my Rebbe and I wondered, you know, does he know what he's talking about? So it was not right to do that. And so therefore, this should be a kapara, the fact that this happened, that the whole thing fell in anyway. So now I shouldn't be punished for second-guessing him. Or Pashup Shad is that he said, oh, I know why this is happening. This is coming as a punishment to me because I didn't trust his sheet. Of course, the question is, what's the answer to Abaye's question? Right? Abaye had a good question. It's true that he maybe had no business questioning his Rebbe. But what taka was Rabbi thinking? So that's a good question. We're going to talk about that over here. Try to understand exactly what the basis for Rabbi's shita was. Okay, we'll stop here.